This is Winning at Life, live financial talk radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Welcome to the show. 3 hours of live talk this morning headed your way. Let's talk about your money, your retirement, growing your money, where you are on the path, Social Security, annuities, wrong or right. I even had a conversation the other day about, reverse mortgages. Got that mall. If you've got a question, a lot of topics to cover, 504-260-0995.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. Did you say got that moan, the reverse mortgage moan?
Yeah.
It has its own moan now?
Yeah, we can start with that real quick. And I said, well, what was that about? Well, we've heard they're bad.
They'll take your house.
They run those commercials late at night. And then I've got an attorney friend that said, and this is the person, once again, telling me why the moan, telling me, you know, there's a lot of foreclosures on those as well. Well, let's go back. When they hear that, well, I heard they're bad. What you've just done is make an emotional decision. You could have somebody tell you they're bad, and how is it they're bad? Oh, somebody else told them bad. Why? They may not recall. They just remember they're bad.
Well, you're using a very subjective description. They're not saying these guys are high fees or these guys are, you know, they shortchange the homeowner. They're just bad. The ethereal concept of
bad. Ethereal bad. And then the late night commercials. Well, you know one reason you see infomercials and stuff running in the middle of the night?
It's cheap.
It's cheap. Look, really, there's not a lot of viewers in the middle of the night when you kind of look at what's the numbers. Why are you watching it in the middle of the night? Insomnia? You can't sleep? You're flipping channels and all of a sudden you see it? Are you watching the whole commercial or are you watching the whole infomercial, whatever that case may be, they're not spending that much money to put that on there. And the network, station, whatever, doesn't have any other programming. And that does make them some revenue there. Oh, and the foreclosures thing. You know, when this is how a reverse mortgage fundamentally short form works. Okay. What you're doing is borrowing equity out of your house, and there's an interest. So if you don't pay debt, interest is credited to the debt, and it grows. Well, meaning a reverse mortgage is the opposite of you borrowing money against the property and paying it off is the normal way we see mortgages. A reverse mortgage means, in essence, you've borrowed money up to a cap, and there's interest credited added to that debt, except you're not paying it. In essence, the way we originally looked at it is you're taking money out by payments and you're growing that debt, plus the interest is growing. So in that process, you've done this over time, and you've got to be essentially over age 62, but you should probably be in your late 60s before you even consider exercising this option because the numbers work better for you then. But you exercise it, and let's say you over time use 50% of the equity inside of that home to generate income and supplement needs you're needing throughout retirement because it's that another source of income. And when both of you die, and both of you are on the reverse and on the title to the property, both of you die. And there's nobody you're leaving the house to. Or whoever you're leaving the house to doesn't want it. You know how the debt is going to get settled up? It's going to go to foreclosure. That is a normal means of settling up debt on property, which means the bank has got to take possession, sell it, and pay off the debt. Now, I was given an example where you used half the equity. Probably what's going to happen is if you have heirs that you're leaving your stuff to, they're going to take possession, sell the property, and pocket the difference, which is the equity that's left in the property.
Same thing as a foreclosure almost, right?
Yeah, it's a process to solve the debt and get a new owner of the property. So let's say you really win. You win with this. What do I mean by win? Is you've taken out more money over time than that house is worth. Guess what? Nobody's wanting to inherit that house. And then what's it going to do? Well, it's the bank's problem and it's FHA's problem because they back all that up.
Mm-hmm.
So what does it do? It goes to foreclosure to settle up the debt. The government eats the balance and then it has a new owner. That is not a bad thing when you're at the end of time and you've left that behind. Now, when is foreclosure a bad thing? Yeah, like you're 40, trying to pay your bills, raise your kids, and you've run out of money, got 6 months behind on the house payment, and you get a foreclosure notice, which is means get out, we're selling the house because you're not paying your part anymore. That's when foreclosure is a bad thing. But what is foreclosure? It's settling up that problem. And it's not like you woke up one day and said, oh, I did not realize we're 6 months behind. Notice on the door, well, we got to get out. That's not going to be like a surprise to you. You know that's coming. But once again, foreclosure is the way to settle up that problem for all parties. So in a reverse world, that's a way to settle that up when everything's done. So when I get right back to the crux of it, what does it do? Does this mean a reverse mortgage works for everyone? Absolutely not. Everyone doesn't need it, but some do. Some might need that supplemental income stream. Some might need to pay off the balance of the mortgage so that $500 a month goes away. And they've got some more to use in there. I'll just give you an example of some numbers. Somebody we recently talked to, $250,000 in value, $18,000 mortgage. Their income sources basically are covering their needs along with a side business they're doing in retirement that eventually is going to stop. So we've got $18,000 in debt and they're wanting to remodel it because it probably needs updating since it's going to be their retirement home. They don't know what they're going to spend on that, but let's say it's $32,000 to update and make it suitable for living out your life there. Okay, so that's $50,000. When you look at their income outside of income source, let's see, how much do they have? Say it's $300,000. Not a lot of extra money that they might need from income sourcing there. So what you're looking at is, what can the mortgage reverse do for them? And they're in their late 60s, let's say. And what can it do? It can make the $18,000 go away. It can pay for that remodeling, and it may still have another $75,000 or $100,000 that could be taken out later. And with credited interest, it might develop more growth than credit is being applied on the borrowed amount as well. And what might else can it do? It might could later when they need it to turn on a monthly check going against that. So that's the things it can do for them in that situation. And let me see, well, is that bad because they're running commercials middle of the night? Was that bad if somebody said, oh, those things are horrible? What's it doing? It's filling their need. And when they both have moved on from life, that debt on that property is going to be settled up some way, somehow, whether it's their kids that are taking it, selling it, and pocketing and splitting up the equity, or let's say they won. There's more debt than it's worth. Guess what? It's still going to get settled up, and that would be called a foreclosure. Not a bad thing. It's just the process.
So it's just another one of those things. Instead of a regular mortgage, you put that modifier reverse in front of it, and so many things go backwards. Instead of you sending a check to the bank, they're sending a check to you. At the end of the whole process, you don't own the house. The bank does. At the beginning of the process, you own the house, or at least mostly. And then also, if everything goes right on a reverse mortgage, you end up in a foreclosure process. In a regular mortgage, if everything goes off the rails, you end up in a foreclosure process.
Yes. But in regard to that, with a reverse mortgage, you're no longer around. You're done, and you've got what you needed and wanted out of that house.
So after the explanation in this meeting, did the groan go away?
Yes. And actually, they even came back around to it because they understood what it might can do for them in their world going forward. Because what they realized, it gives me options to solve some of the issues that I might have. And one of the issues is maybe they don't have enough money for all this to work out long term. Because when they're looking at this business that they have, so they're kind of in a semi-retirement that's still running this business, but this business is winding down. So where does that income come from there? Is it going to come from that small amount of assets that they still have? Or is this coming from somewhere else? And I think those assets outside are about $320,000 is somewhat of a number. That's why I call it $300,000. But you start, you pay off the $18,000, you spend $30,000. Well, you just reduced it by $50,000 there. So that equity can have a purpose that gives you value in the future.
You got a financial situation, not quite sure what to do? Call Gregory. 504-260-0995. If you're one of the 67,000 Louisiana taxpayers who got a little extra money this week, it was an accident. I'll explain next. I'm James Parker. We're Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
You make me who I want to be. You make it easy.
Welcome back. Winning at Life, live financial talk radio. If you'd like to join the conversation, we have a phone number for you. We also have an app for you to download and connect to the show. You can text, email, call from the show. Connect to the show beyond right now as well, because it gives you a lot of other links. Hey, there's even a photo page in the app. However, you can listen to podcasts. You can stream the show. If you get disconnected from this hour that you've left your car, left the house, want to stream it on your smartphone, you can do so through the Winning at Life app. Just go to your app store and type in Winning at Life, free download. The phone number to join the conversation, you pick. It's kind of like you pick the topic. Yeah, it's easy. 504-260-0995. And if you say, well, I'd just rather shoot you an email with a question without the app, without the call, info@gregoryricks.com.
Yeah, our guest coming up in the next hour is Wes Blanchard. He's the estate planning attorney of the Total Wealth Authority. Been super popular lately. Last month we had an estate planning lunch and learn, just like a continuing education luncheon event. And it filled up, and the overflow list is going to the event that is happening on Monday, but it's already full. We have an overflow list for the next event that we're going to have in April that is estate planning related. For those listening on WJBO out of Baton Rouge, you drop us at 11. You can continue listening to the show. If you download the Winning at Life app and hit listen, it'll just keep going with us here because we're on until 1 o'clock. So you guys feel free to join us. So in Louisiana, the Division of Administration, that's its official title. That sounds so vague. They are telling 66,780, so about 67,000 Louisiana taxpayers, hey, if you received a duplicate tax refund on Wednesday, sit tight. The state is going to recoup those funds, and you probably don't need to do anything just yet. It's a $26 million mistake. For those early birds, you make me sick, but if you've already got your taxes in and filed with the state, they've been running batches of the returns that are already completed, and they accidentally ran one twice. It ran on Tuesday, and then it ran again on Wednesday. So it sent out the refunds twice. And by sent out, this is 2019. For most of the people, it got direct deposited into their bank accounts. For whoever was left over, most of whoever was left over, they're getting sent a, looks like a debit card, but it just has the cash on it from your state tax return. Now, what's going to happen over the course of the next few days, and what's already happened since they discovered the problem on Wednesday and then started working on it on Thursday, for those of you who had it direct deposited, a lot of you are just going to see it sucked right out. It was there one day, and then there was another one there one day, and then one of them went away because you got your refund twice. For the people who got the card, it's going to be a little more difficult. Either you can return the card, or after 30 days, if you haven't contacted them, they will just send you a bill. If you can't afford it, you can make a payment plan. For those of you who got all the money in your direct deposit and then spent it all as fast as you could before the state could recoup it, if they don't get that money back in 30 days, they are going to send you a bill. And the same thing applies, that if you can't afford to pay the bill straight up, then they will allow you to put together a payment plan. I've never heard of this one, Gregory. I've never heard of duplicate returns being sent out. And since it's 2019, that money was immediately available to everyone who had direct deposit. And I imagine some of them already spent it.
Look, do you know when money, well, I don't mean to ask it to you that way, but I'll make an assumption, because I sit down and talk to a lot of people. And sometimes, you know, when we'll talk about, say their RMDs going out to them, I don't know if I was getting that. So they'll go all of a sudden and even grab their smartphone, which is pretty cool, sitting there in the meeting. They get their smartphone, and you know, this is somebody in their 70s, and it's just like how everybody's adapted to technology. Even those that, you know, when you think where we're at and what technology, how it's changed over the past 10 years, but they're able to look on their smartphone, but then they're looking, okay, and then, I'm not sure, here's a number, so I go get the net, I go verify the net number that's supposed to be going in. Let's say it's $122.70. So, okay, here's the net after taxes, and we show it going on January 24th, and other deposits should have been February 23rd. And they say, oh, yeah, it's there. So if some, what if they had sent an duplicate, just hypothetically, that company sent a duplicate deposit for that, want that to happen, but they wouldn't have known that either. So if you're getting a tax refund dropped into your checking account, and a few days later they send you another one, are they going to know? And what I would think, some people probably, they just check their balance, or they're used to how things flow, and they're not even aware of it. I guess they're not going to send you alert into your checking account where a line of code shows up and says, hey, we sent you more money than we're supposed to, instead of numbers, it's words.
Yeah, that'd be
nice. It's not going to show up that way. You're going to get a letter in the mail, which will obviously be a week or so later, because that's a whole nother process to do that. So yeah, I could see where the money gets spent and they might need a plan for giving it back.
I think I would have been one of the guys that totally missed this, you know, because these state refunds aren't huge. It's not like you're getting $8,000 back for most of them. I mean, what's the state income tax and withholding? It's piddly. So I think, what did I get from them last year? Like $60? It was nothing. I mean, Jude's got me so flattened out. I'm kind of proud of that too, but I would have been one of the guys that missed it. Would you have caught this? Because the deposit went down on Wednesday. It's Saturday. You think you would have caught it in 3 days?
No, but you know, there's a point every month you kind of review things and say, okay, what's going on in the account at that point, but wouldn't have like, did my deposit happen? You know, I don't check those. They're just supposed to happen.
Yeah.
You know, the bank, firm payroll, the bank delayed deposits, and I was one of them. So, and I was told that to me by somebody that checks all that stuff. I didn't know, like, look in my account, oh Lord, I'm in trouble, I don't have my bank deposit. I think it was corrected by next morning. But you know, some people, that's a problem, because they're like, oh, I need that. Everybody's kind of different. You know, not everybody carries margin room in their checking account, you know, to, if there's a delay or some quirk that happens. And in this digital world, those things happen. Sometimes you get more, sometimes you're expecting it and you get less because of a delay.
Yeah. It wasn't that long ago. I was making about half the amount of money I'm making now. And I would watch for the second that direct deposit came in, because then I could resume my life. There were 18 things that were waiting for me to have that money spent on it. And now that I do have a little margin, yeah, I'll check it whenever I have time, whenever I get around to it. Oh, it's delayed by a day. Big deal. At least I got it. It'll be fine. But yeah, for some people though, this was a nice little extra amount of money. And I know there are some people that went out and spent it as fast as they could. They're like, oh, they made a mistake. So they're onto it. If you saw the mistake in your accounts, don't get excited. You're not going to get to keep that money. And the funny thing is they're not quite sure what caused the computer program to run twice. They think because maybe it ran over the midnight line that it confused it because it started the process on Tuesday and technically finished on Wednesday. But for some reason, it just ran on Wednesday again, and everything that was batched together got resent out. So little bonus there. Can't believe the state would make such an error like that. They seem to have all their stuff together all the time. It's so odd.
They're trying. They're trying.
I'm glad they're doing direct deposit and the debit cards now. That's pretty cool in my book. All right, coming up next, I want to do a caller of the week. Are you all right with that, Gregory?
I am.
And I also want to talk about that stat that Maria Bartiromo gave us. The United States has more millionaires now than Sweden has people. Which I thought was pretty cool. But coming up in the next segment here, the caller of the week, Doug in Covington, he's taken early Social Security. He's going to continue to work. And he was asking Gregory, how does the earnings clawback work? And how do the taxes work? Gregory, you sound like you've handled that question a couple times before.
I have.
Yeah. All right. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, call Gregory, 504-260-0995, or you can send us a text or a call from the front screen of the Winning at Life app. Got a lot coming up. Still got to talk about the book giveaway. Still got to talk about some live events, but we'll be happy to talk to you as well. 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Hey, welcome. This is Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks, your wallet's favorite show. I'm your wallet's favorite co-host. If you don't believe me, just ask them. All right, did you get that settled? If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, call Gregory, 504-260-0995. We're going to do our caller of the week now. All right, to the phones we go. Doug in Covington, you're next up on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. What can we do for you, Doug?
Well, can you hear me?
Yeah, hear you great.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, I got a question. I'm getting ready to retire this summer, and I was wondering about the amount that I can make on a part-time job while drawing Social Security and how that will affect my taxes at the end of the year.
So what is your age now?
When I retire, I'll be 64.
So you're taking it early?
Yeah.
Okay.
So you're definitely turning it on early then?
Say again?
So you're planning to absolutely turn it on when you retire?
Oh, yes, sir.
Okay, so let me see. Here's that. Last year it was $17,040 is what it was. And
now, how
I was
will that
just
affect
looking.
My tax filing jointly with what?
Social Security, subject to your income level, is either 0% inclusive, 50% inclusive, or 85% inclusive. So really, there's a formula they have for figuring out which level it's at. So it takes your adjusted gross income plus half of Social Security, depending whether you're single or married. And if you break through that test, that portion is going to be taxable of your Social Security. And I'd say most people fall into where Social Security is 50% inclusive in your taxes or 85% inclusive.
Yeah, I'm figuring we'll be bringing in about 55 a year with everything.
With the Social Security? So you only, it's an adjusted gross income plus half of the Social Security is what it would take? So I guess you would take your wife's income,
yeah,
your part-time income,
yeah,
and half.
Yeah, that's
Social
how
Security.
They get to if you break through what part's taxable. Now, getting back to what the earnings test is in 2019, it's $17,640.
A little bit of a jump.
Is where your is where they will take back benefits, and essentially they would withhold $1 for every $2 of earnings in excess of that exempt amount, and it just inches up like each year. So I think it's the first time I've given that number out this year, but 2018 it was once again $17,040.
Yeah, but doesn't the rules change once he reaches full retirement age, or is for the clawback? Doesn't that go away?
Yes, once he reaches FRA, making money over that earnings test goes away. Them taking back over the earnings test. The earnings test goes away. Yeah.
Won't that be 66?
Depending on your birth year, but I'll just define, for most people asking that question around your age right now, it's 66 and a few months.
Are you born after 54?
Yeah, I was born at 55.
All right. Well, Doug, anything else we can do for you?
No, sir. You answered my question, and I appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Glad you called.
Thank you. You guys have a blessed evening.
All right, we're back live now. And, Gregory, that's a question that not only have you gotten it before, you probably have that conversation every week, at least, on the Social Security early, turn it on early. How's the clawback work? How is it taxed? And you have to explain what a combined income is. It's your adjusted gross income plus half of your Social Security. Then it's got to fall in this bracket. And then it's still not taxable. Maybe it's just 50% taxable versus 85% taxable. You say this stuff in your sleep at this point, right? Because, look, it's one of the things. You say that everyone who comes through the door, if they live long enough, they're going to have to answer two questions. When do you turn on Social Security? How do you start Medicare? So this is one of the questions that you have to answer for almost every client.
Yeah, absolutely, because when you're looking at income and Social Security and you have to talk about it being taxable, not everybody just realizes how it is taxed. Some people are really surprised that it's taxed as income. And then, you know, they're also not aware of earning tests. They're just like, oh, I'm 62. I can turn on income. Sometimes that's just the first thought, is I can turn on income. Well, there's an income test. There's a clawback on that. You know, they're going to take, you know, above in 2019, it's $17,640. So every $2 above that, they pull a dollar back. You're losing, and they'll deduct it from you the coming year. However, you are credited that, and it goes in your earnings bank for generation of Social Security in the future. So it's not something you lose. And it should be, if you're going to make more than, why, you know, the question is, why are you turning it on? And you can get to a point where you're making too much and basically negating that. You're shrinking the check, and you're paying taxes on it, and it grosses up your income. It makes your income larger, could put you into a higher tax bracket. It can also make Social Security more inclusive in taxes as well. And I was actually about to pull up a chart on that. Getting used to this laptop. You know, you changed laptops lately, James?
I've had this trusty maroon laptop in front of me since you know, when I bought this, when we put together this studio, I was like, all right, I'm gonna need
it. Yeah, and you got a really good deal on that one. I guess I like mine to do too much. I'm just saying, it's like technology. You get a new 737 Max 8 jet. That's not like the old jet that you had, you know. You get the new car. It's got more buttons, whistles, and more I've got to look at. Now I've got a laptop. Maybe they overanalyze, put too much. Now I'm having problem with my internet speed that's able to clock through the computer, because now I'm having to do the speed test like every day. Is it working right? No, I've got to shut off the engines, reboot everything, then it works.
Well, my HP looks like
then it's going to fly just fine.
It was built on the same chassis that they've been using for decades. Yeah,
just like the same chassis. Okay, so they've not outgrown that old chassis there. Okay, so when we're talking about federal tax return as an individual and your combined income is between $25,000 and $34,000, you have to pay income tax on up to 50% of your Social Security benefits. So then if you have, as an individual, more than $34,000 in income, you're paying up to 85% on your benefits. So it's not 100% taxable. So one way we create a little margin when I'm having a discussion, like, okay, we're, you know, because part of the discussion is, you know, when someone, how much do you need a month? Well, I need $5,500 a month to get by. Is that a gross or a net? You have to ask that, because I asked it yesterday. Individual said, yeah, I need $8,500 a month. And I said, is that a gross number or net? He said, that's a net number. So, and I was not surprised by him knowing that, but I'll tell you, more often I'm getting that growth, that net number, because they've looked at it, this, yeah, I need $5,500 a month to pay the bills and travel. I've kind of built everything in. Well, they've given me their net number, so we have to gross that up, because what are we grossing it for? Taxes. You have to consider taxes. So when we're running those numbers, I'll just factor in that Social Security, because I don't want to get it just really tight, because you need some margin. What is margin? Some room in the calculations. So I'll just assume Social Security is 100% taxable. When they're needing that kind of number, we're not, well, is it 50%? Is it zero?
No, you're or 50%, 85%?
You're going to be at 85% inclusive. And here's why. When you file a joint return, you and your spouse have a combined income that is between $32,000 and $44,000. It's going to be 50% inclusive. So now you know when it's above $44,000, it's going to be 85% inclusive. So we'll do the simple math, simplify the math, and just make it 100% inclusive when we're working calculations. But I do go back and tell them that I factored your Social Security as 100%, but it's not. So I always explain that, but they get, and they kind of like creating that margin there.
Just a little bit of cushion, not much.
Yeah, not much cushion, but a little bit. And that's where a client that we had turned on income a few months ago, and we had a meeting this week, and he didn't have enough margin, didn't have any margin, so we adjusted his income and created margin.
Boy, those people that run the tight ship are scary, aren't they? If you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, call Gregory, 504-260-0995, or you can give us a call or text from the Winning at Life app. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Yeah, this is it. Winning at Life. Join the Winning at Life Nation like Ashley just did. She downloaded the app.
Hi, Ashley. How you doing?
Welcome to the family. Welcome to the nation. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. That's James Parker. We are Winning at Life, live financial talk radio. We're here with you till 1 o'clock. Some of you are moving on at the top of the hour, and you can connect to us through the Winning at Life app, stream the show, or iHeartRadio as well. And just connect to, I guess one way to tell them, connect to WRNO. It's real easy. Just you go on the app, find that.
Yeah, that's our flagship.
Us up for the rest of the morning. If you'd like to join the conversation, 504-260-0995, and you can choose the topic.
All right, you want to go straight to
the... We prefer it to be about money, though.
You want to go straight to the phones here?
Yeah.
Okay, this is going to be Miniman in Algiers. You're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Did I get your name right, Miniman?
Yeah, it's a nickname. I have a company. I make parts for microscopes, so kind of became my nickname. My tax preparer, my accountant, in December sent me an email saying, hey, look, looks like you're going to owe about $1,000 this year. But right when he had sent that email, I had just purchased an electric car, a Tesla.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I got a $7,500, and I don't remember if it's a tax credit, a tax write off, I don't even know what it. So in my mind, does that mean that the estimated $1,000 that I was going to owe, would that now be that I'd get $6,500 back? Is that like I'm sure it's not a one for one exchange. And you know, my question would be to my accountant specifically. I'm just asking you generally, because I can't, when I call him, he's so busy, I can't get a hold of him right now. It's tax season. So, but like, just generally, do you think that's what it's going to come out to, or?
It's a credit would be towards taxes owed. They're not putting money in your pocket for buying that. And what the caller's talking about is a federal Internal Revenue Service tax credit is regarding electric cars is for $2,500 to $7,500 per new electric vehicle purchased for use in the U.S. The size of the credit depends on the size of your battery.
Miniman.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the size of your battery. So you have a big battery.
Look, if you got Tesla, I think all those qualify for the $7,500.
There's one other. Well, yeah. But the tax credit will be available until $200,000 qualified electric vehicles have been sold in the U.S. by each manufacturer.
So yeah,
that,
I got
that
in.
That is a phase out.
Yeah, that's the phase out. We got in before the phase out. We made it. We made it to the. We purchased it in December, and I don't think the phase out happened until January or February.
And there is a form to refer to, so this might help you by actually looking at the tax form. It's IRS form 8936. 8936 is the form, and that probably would pretty much spell out how that worked for you. I've not done it because I've not bought an electric car. I kind of like those gas-powered ones still, I guess.
But this could
If you haven't driven a Tesla yet, you don't know what you're missing, man. It is. It's like a gas-powered car on steroids, but guess what? Every night I just go home and plug it into the driveway. I've been to a gas station since I bought it. It's just a great feeling.
So you act like needed a soda or some
right, some chips
or some lottery ticket.
Yeah, no.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say the Tesla I got was not that bad. I mean, compared to a car, it was a couple grand extra that I probably would have paid, but you save it on gas and in a year or two.
Yeah, but just to point out, I have a friend that is on his second Tesla, and I believe he got the Model 3 Performance, if I have that right.
Yeah, that's what I got.
And I think he had the Model X before. It was kind of with the gold wing door or something on the back set of doors.
Oh yeah,
SUV light. Look, those things are quick. They will roll. It's just they're weird. It's different, He has this giant on his new one. He has like a giant screen right there on the dash, like some,
yeah, yeah.
It looks
that,
like
it's
a huge
like a big
laptop.
iPad that controls yeah. everything basically in the car. It's a really sweet ride. And plus, you get those tax write off. And I think what Tesla did was when the tax write off went away, they said that they would make up the difference. So the tax write-off went from $7,500 to half of that because they had hit that they'd sold a million cars or whatever. It dropped down to half, but Tesla said they would make up the difference for people that were buying them. So with the price of the car, they dropped it down another $2,500 or whatever. So you didn't really lose anything by buying. You didn't get the tax break, but the price went down a little bit.
Yeah, so hopefully that goes well for you and service goes well if needed or those computer updates. Is that a lease or a purchase that you did, by the way?
That was a purchase. I don't think you get the tax deal for a lease.
Okay.
But that's I think this will swing his well. Return into positive territory then because the tax credits, they will pay you that money back.
Yeah, well, that's great. That's great, yeah.
Yeah.
So I got several employees. I don't know if you guys are planning any future shows, but maybe around tax time, but a lot of my, I've three employees. They all make, under 100. And they all thought they were going to get tax bill. They were going to get a tax cut and all their taxes have gone up. They all owe more. I mean, I got a pretty significant tax cut, but I'm in a different, bracket because I own the company and I got a lot of investments and stuff. But maybe you guys could do a show on how this kind of turned out to be a scam.
Well, actually, we're having a lunch and learn tax class.
The 25th, March 25th.
Week from Monday. So Jude Heath, CPA, is going to be there. It's at our annex at our office in Metairie. And Jude Heath is going to be there kind of to talk about the changes and how they affect you. But one of the things to look at, were there withholdings less than previous year. So that's one of the things we are seeing that was there. And of course, when they lower brackets, they take away some deductions. So it can be a number of things where it isn't quite what we were expecting when it comes to our pocketbook.
Yeah, we had an example of someone whose taxes went down by $100 a month, but their health insurance went up by $120 a month. So it was a net $20 loss for them. They're like, hey, this is a bogus tax bill. It's like, no, your health insurance ate up all your savings there, but there's a thousand reasons. But hey, great call, Mini Man. Good luck with the microscope. Sounds like a great little business you got there. I'd love to hear from you in the future.
Thanks, fellas.
Yeah, hey, I may need some lenses, maybe a refractive mirror. I got a guy now. All right. Have a good one, bud. All right. If you want to be next, 504-260-0995. Just to catch you up on a quickie here, the Mega Millions guy that won the second biggest jackpot ever, the $1.5 billion. He was in South Carolina, and I'd brought this up 2 weeks ago because no one had claimed the pot yet. Well, someone finally came up and claimed the pot this week, and so they're not going to take the $1.5 billion. They're going to take the lump sum. It's estimated at $878 million. So then there's an automatic withholding of, what is that, like 20% or something? So automatic withholding is going to take away $211 million. They're going to be taxed at the 37% top rate. There is no 3.8% net investment income tax. So all being told, he's actually going to take home about $490 million after taxes.
Well, the 20% withholding is not the tax amount. So I'd want to know, okay, what is that? Okay, we've put money in the charity. Is there other ways I can write off some? And otherwise, I'm kind of wanting that check to go on out to them. You don't want a big error on that. Even though you do have some margin, I would expect, on what you netted.
All right. Hey, tell them about the book.
Hey, we've just started talking about taxes. Well, look, if you want to, like, try to eliminate more taxes on future income, you should be building multiple streams of income. You also should be thinking about, how can I opt out? How can I create tax-free income? I want to send you a book. And just ask for the book about creating tax-free income. I'll send it. A friend of mine wrote it, and it just gives you a different way of thinking about it. Call the office, 504-832-9200, info@gregoryricks.com, to get that book.
All right, our WJBO listeners, we're about to step away from your signal. If you want to continue listening, listen on the Winning at Life app. If you have a financial situation, 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Welcome, Winning at Life, live financial talk radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Yeah, you found us. Join the Winning at Life Nation. Download the app. Yeah, download the app and join the conversation. You can text, email, call. Ashley was the recent download. I'll check again to see if Sam or John or Sue has downloaded as well. If you want to join the conversation, the phone number, and hey, you can pick the topic. We just prefer it to be related to money, or insist, 504-260-0995.
All right, we got Wes Blanchard joining us. He's the estate planning attorney of the Total Wealth Authority, and he's apparently the cutest girl at the prom this month, because his event that we had in February filled up, and there's a big overflow waiting list. So the event we're having with him on Monday on estate planning, it's just a little continuing education luncheon. It's already filled up, and we got a waiting list. It's got the April event that we haven't even set a date for yet, I don't think. It's halfway full now. So congrats on being so popular, Wes. Do you feel loved here, knowing that we set up these luncheon events, and you were probably worried, oh, what if only three people show up?
No, that's awesome. We had a really good turnout last time. Everybody was pretty engaged, had a decent Q&A. As well afterwards, and yeah, it's a good time. I'm looking forward to just sort of continuing that on and helping some folks out along the way.
All right, we'll talk more about the events in just a minute. 504-260-0995. Let's talk to Carl in Clinton. You're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Carl?
Oh, great. I have a question. I'm getting ready to sign up for Social Security. My age is 68, December the 1st, and I just was wondering about some of the stuff on the internet, whether it's true you could gain more of a payment by filling out paperwork properly. I don't know if that's true, but this is where I'm at, and I've got $250,000 in a fund that I could draw out or not draw out along with that. So any advice?
Not sure what you're talking about paperwork-wise. Your paperwork or opting in to turn on Social Security online. You're age 68, so you are beyond full retirement age.
Yes.
Technically, we look at that growth on an annual basis. You increased by 8% a year for each year of deferral. Technically, yes. You're getting credit by a month that you're deferring to turn that on. And if you do it in a cycle at any point during the year, it may, all that credit's not going to show up, but when it cycles to the next anniversary or next calendar year, it cycles and you'll see a slight adjustment on that. But there's no tricks or workarounds that get you some magic form that gets you even more from that standpoint.
Okay. All right.
Is there a spousal benefit being turned on as well? Is there a spouse?
Sir. Uh-huh. Yes, sir.
Has your spouse turned that benefit on yet?
No, sir. We're going together.
Okay.
And
both the same age?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And so if I sign up at the end of this month, do I lose anything by doing that?
No.
Okay.
You need to give them advance notice. Have you been online? Have you set up your online account?
No, sir.
Okay. You could do it through doing that method. And if you want a more extended discussion, you could talk with them about it. It's not going to go sign up and start the check this month. You're basically going to be 30 days out from doing that. You're beyond full retirement age. So the month you elect to turn it on, it's turning on. You're not having to be a certain age for, you know, where you have timing issues is prior to full retirement age. Somebody reaching 62, 63, 64 wanting to turn it on. There's a little bit of timing issue there for credit.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I appreciate your time. I listen to you all the time on here.
Awesome. Thanks, Carl. Thanks for listening, Carl. If you have any other questions, let us know and call the office if you need further assistance or calculations or anything like that.
Thank you, sir.
An extra piece of paperwork? What is he thinking of? What is the rumor that's floated across his desk?
There could be something. I see a lot of stuff online because we are looking at a lot of things regarding Social Security, and we're just aware of it. And maybe they're selling a newsletter. Maybe they're selling a manual. There's somebody selling a guide that, if you do this, you get more. Or if you switch over to the Canadian Social Security system, you get more. Look, that's all bogus. Somebody might be selling something. Social Security is, for the most part, is straight up. You're going to get what you're eligible for. Now, if there are some situations regarding turning on spousal income or your spouse turning on their income earlier, switching to later, there's different scenarios you need to look at what maximizes you. Just like the other day, had a discussion where somebody's age is going to turn his on at age 70. His wife, they were talking about waiting to age 70 as well. And I said, look, she's turning FRA this year. In this case, we should turn hers on at her full retirement age she's reaching this year. Because when we ran the numbers from this point out to 15 years out, both scenarios, she waited to 70 and the balance of the 15 years are turning it on now, the payout is $242,000 and some change. Okay, and he's creating the bigger check. Why are we deferring income in that case? Because over 15 years, you're getting the same amount. Go ahead and get that income into the mix. So you have to look at those numbers, and that's where sometimes doing a certain thing can gain you more, could gain you less.
But it's not a form. It's the strategy and talking to somebody like you to figure it out.
Yeah, there's only one way to go online, and that's through your SSA.gov account that you can and actually really should sign up, especially if you have made it to FRA and not turned on Social Security, you, by George, should turn on your SSA account so somebody else doesn't turn on that Social Security for you.
All right, I'm going to do a hard pivot into something that's not so fun, but it's right up Wes's alley. Wes is the estate planning attorney of the Total Wealth Authority, and I have a friend that kind of needs some advice from you, Wes. I got a buddy, Richard, a guy back in Texas, but watches the show on Periscope quite often. And he's in a horrible situation because he thinks he may have ALS. And he keeps researching the symptoms online and how it starts out and what other people have gone through. And it looks like what he's going through. And he's only a few years older than us, Wes. He's actually a couple years younger than Gregory. So his concern is if he goes to the doctor and gets the actual diagnosis, that's going to screw some things up. He's worried if that will affect his ability to get life insurance. or how much his life insurance will cost. And so maybe that should overlap this with Gregory, too. If you think you may have ALS or a terminal illness, should you go get a life insurance policy and get signed up for that before you get the official diagnosis? Will the official diagnosis hurt you in your attempts to get life insurance?
I'm a little confused. How did we get a diagnosis and it's not official? How do you get a diagnosis that you have ALS, but it's not official?
It's not official because he's self-diagnosing. He has all of these symptoms. He has the funny feelings in his extremities, and he went through a list with me, and he's been looking it up online, and he's been following this for 3 months now. His symptoms got really bad in December.
Okay. Core thing here is if he has had any medical discussions with anybody in the medical world, like in the office or something, it could be noted. If it's noted there and you say, well, it was just a casual conversation with my doctor in there. Well, if he put it something in the notes to that, it's there.
Wow. Okay.
Now, you're buying any significant amount of life insurance, they're going to do urine and blood work. That's going to be requested. They're going to ask you a whole list of questions about these things that you're having, and that might come to a yes or no answer there. Also, there is going to be a health questionnaire, and they are likely to request records from your physician from that standpoint. So be careful there. Tell the truth as how it's asked.
Right,
this could show up in the blood work. I'm just telling you, there's people that we also, we had a decline on a case last year, and the individual was totally shocked by it. Guy looked healthy and everything. There was a decline because something showed up in the blood work.
Are you saying they found something he didn't know about?
He says he didn't know about it. It wasn't disclosed to us. We don't know what it is. They won't tell us. And you know what? We're not going to ask the client. We just state this is what they told us. You might want to go see your physician, and you could request information regarding that test. So sometimes something shows up that you're not aware of, but shows up like, you know, could be a good thing. There's something he needs to take care of, and things will be fine.
All right, so now he's in a rush asking me all kinds of estate planning questions. And he did a will when he was in his first marriage, and he had two daughters. And he did a will after the second daughter. That was 15 years ago. He's since been divorced. His daughters both live with the ex-wife. He's remarried, only been remarried for about 3 years now. But he needs to get that redone. Where does he start?
Well, I think the first place to start is to figure out what changes need to be made. I mean, the most obvious point, I think, there is the situation with your spouse. I'm not sure what the first will said, but
everything goes to the first wife.
Exactly. Yeah. So you want to go ahead and make that change. I mean, Louisiana kind of takes care of that for you if you forget to do that. I think we had covered that at some point, but I'm not sure what Texas does. Ultimately, it's something you need to look into and do so quickly.
I think they have the same setup as Mississippi and Gregory. I'm pretty familiar with that one. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do, we've got Gregory Rickson here, financial advisor. We've got Wes Blanchard, the estate planning attorney, the Total Wealth Authority, 504-260-0995. We'll continue with this. We've got some good calls lined up, and hopefully we can hear from you too. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
This is it. Winning at Life. Live Financial Talk Radio. Join the conversation, 504-260-0995. We have Wes Blanchard. Let's talk some estate planning this hour. We've got more to cover. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks.
All right, we'll get back to situation we're having with our listener friend Richard in just a minute. Let's go ahead and knock out Al in River Ridge. He's been waiting patiently. Thanks for holding, Al. You're on Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks, talking to Gregory, Wes, and James. How can we help you?
Thanks a lot. My question is, I'm 70 years old. I'm a retired federal employee, but I'm still working for a private company. And I've earned enough to draw Social Security, but I'm not going to because of the windfall elimination. But my question is, my wife is 65. Could she draw on my Social Security that I've earned until she reached the full retirement age, and then she'll draw on her own?
Are you receiving a pension benefit?
I'm receiving a federal pension, yes.
And so you have not turned on Social Security, so she would not be able to draw.
Okay. From she your can only benefit. Do that if I turn on my Social Security.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, you need to turn that on anyway. Yeah. It's,
well, it's, he. It's going to get. He doesn't have a Social Security benefit because of the windfall elimination, James.
What?
Yeah. You, so you are a federal were a federal employee that did not participate in Social Security?
Correct.
Okay. So, yeah, there's no Social Security benefit for him. So if there's no turning it on, there is no spousal benefit.
Okay. So she has to wait until she could turn it on now or wait till the full retirement age.
Well, subject, what is her age?
She's 65.
65. Yeah, she can turn it on. Hers at any point. There, but if there's, you know, you don't have really a work record because you've not participated in anything for her to draw off of. And
well, she's earned her own Social Security, and she could turn it on at any time. But we were waiting for her to earn full retirement age before we turned it on for her.
Right. True.
Now I've earned enough for Social Security. I mean, if I wanted to, but I was just concerned about turning it on and getting my pension reduced.
So you're saying in your case it would reduce your pension versus
the windfall elimination would kick in, and I would get a reduced Social Security or reduced pension if I turned it on. I mean, I've earned it.
You're
going to
get reduced. You're going to get reduced Social Security.
Right. But if I did that, could she then turn it on for herself?
If you're eligible for benefits, you have to have it turned on. What was your birth year?
1948.
Here, and you're at age 70. What is her birth year?
52.
Her birth year is 52.
So her full retirement age is 66.
She could deem. This is something where you actually need to go talk to Social Security.
Okay.
I'll just call this complicated. And just to make sure, because I'm not going to give you a final say on this because of birth years as well.
Right.
There's a few rules come in there, but the complication is the offset. I think you and her should go talk to Social Security is the guidance I'm giving you here.
Okay, I agree.
On that, not telling you definite one way or the other. There's some questions about it, but if there's a chance you can get it turned on, I would do that. Because she has the possibility of deeming because of her birth year.
I understand. Thank you very much.
Great call, Al. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
504-260-0995. If you have a financial situation, not quite sure what to do. We got Gregory Ricks, financial advisor. We got Wes Blanchard, estate planning attorney. I mean, I'm here too, but you're not going to ask me anything. So, Wes, back to the situation we're having with Richard, a friend of the show, thinks he may have ALS. And so he's trying to get all his ducks in a row before he goes in for the diagnosis because he thinks that'll change a lot of things. And talking to Gregory in the last segment, it will change some things with in regards to life insurance. In regards to estate planning, though, where does the plan of attack need to happen first?
So I think it's more or less about time for him, because as I understand it, ALS is a disease that it sort of takes its own course as far as how quickly it comes on. So I don't know if the predictability of it is something you really want to leave up to chance. But in his case, I think we're talking about a will that was drafted with a previous spouse. They were divorced. He then remarries, and the will hasn't been updated. So that's the first red flag you need to fix. And we kind of went down a rabbit hole here during the break about what the different scenario would be here out in Louisiana versus what it may be in Texas and
Mississippi.
Yeah, and I'm yeah, as it applies there. So.
Yeah, so do that. How is it different in Louisiana? If you have an ex-spouse on a will, they'll kick them out, or they'll kick them out?
Yeah, that's right. So if you're married, you have your ex-wife or then ex-wife at this point listed in your will, and you don't go about updating that will afterwards, Louisiana's going to look at that and say, look, based on your divorce, we're going to assume that you wanted to remove your spouse from the will here, and so we'll proceed as if he or she is not there. However, and this is the point that Gregory brought up during the break, is, well, what if that was actually the intended benefit? And I've seen that in clients that we've worked with where a divorce occurred, and in reality what happened was one of the spouse's condition medical condition deteriorated, you know, after the divorce a few years. And there was really no one else to help him except now his ex-spouse. And so although they never remarried, in essence, that family home kind of came back together. The will was never changed after the divorce. So the ex-spouse was still in the will. And for all intents and purposes, after the divorce was finalized, the family unit sort of had resumed. They didn't think twice about updating that will. And in essence, when we were working through that estate, you know, we kind of had to bring that situation to the family and have them understand, you know, she for legal purposes is going to be written out because that will was still dated prior to the divorce. Now, one way you can sort of overcome that presumption,
like if you actually do want all your assets to go to the ex-spouse.
Correct. One way to overcome that presumption is to really just redate the will, re-execute the will after the divorce. And I think that then makes clear that your intent is still to have your ex-spouse take in your estate as you see fit. It's not something you see very often. That particular circumstance is something that I can't imagine seeing probably for another decade. You just don't hear it very often. But it does happen, and so it's something that you have to work through. But I guess relating it back to Randy's case here, or Richard, you know, that's going to be the first thing he needs to speak with someone in Texas about is what effect there may be there. And then from there, really move on to getting the proper medical documentation, power of attorney, financial power of attorney, those kind of things in place to make sure that the people that he trusts can help him out. Because, you know, we've seen it, especially in this region. You know, I think we're all aware of the Gleason Foundation, all the great work they've done. But it's also kind of put the condition out there. And we know how limited you could become if you're subject to that disease. And you're going to need a lot of assistance. And so you just need to go about getting your game plan together.
I think from that standpoint, what that tells me is whenever there's a life event, you should review documents. And it might not be a divorce or a death. It might be because your children have reached a certain age. And I would say, and I kind of, what would you define it? Do they reach age 18, age 21, age 26, or is it finished with college? Somewhere in there, you have to have a timestamp. Wes might have one depending upon, where you are in life, and that's whether or not you have a will. But let's take this to one other area. Okay, 401ks under ERISA rules. If you are divorced, not remarried, and left the ex as the beneficiary, the ex is the beneficiary.
That's right.
On federal IRS rules, the IRA, the beneficiary is the beneficiary. Now, let's go back to the 401k. I'm going to complicate it. You go and remarry, and the ex is still the Benny on the 401k. Guess who's automatically the Benny? The new wife.
Really?
Yes. If you had the kids as Benny and you remarry, the wife, the new wife's automatically the beneficiary. Well, that's not what I wanted. Well, then you need to go in and update it and put a timestamp on it like Wes was talking about. Now, let's move back to the IRA. If you had the ex and you remarry, it's not automatic on an IRA or your life insurance.
And this isn't
or
an annuity beneficiary. This isn't a Louisiana thing. This is a federal thing, right?
Federal. Okay. So you can see why you need coordination between who's helping you with your estate planning and an advisor that understands that and coordinates as well. Because we just, all kind of complications can happen.
All right. That's Gregory Ricks. We got Wes Blanchard in here, estate planning attorney of the Total Wealth Authority. If you have a financial situation or an estate planning question and you're not quite sure what to do, give us a call, 504-260-0995. Or you can give us a call or text from the front screen of the Winning at Life app. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
But you gotta keep your head up, oh, and you can let your head down, hey. You gotta keep your head
Welcome
up.
Welcome back. Oh, Winning at Life. Download the Winning at Life app. join the Winning at Life Nation. You can text, email, call the show through the app. You can jump on the stream, listen to podcasts. It might become your wallet's favorite app. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks, and yes, we are winning at life. And if you'd like to join the conversation the old-fashioned way, you know, get the phone, make the call, 504-260-0995.
All right, to the phones we go. Steve in Hammond, you're next up on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks, talking to James, Gregory, and Wes. How can we help you, Steve?
I'm trying to figure out, right now I have 41 years of service in the healthcare industry into a small hospital, and I have a 403B that was set up 41 years ago, and I have about $460,000 in it. And what I'm trying to figure out, as we're making some changes in our situation at the hospital, and I am trying to decide what I need to do. For years, I've been able to make, you know, in $20,000-$30,000 a year excess in call money, and that is fixing to go away. So, and I'm 62 years old. I'm tired. I don't, you know, I'm trying to figure out a way that I can replace that money. And, you know, I went to HR and I found out that we do not have in-house distribution from my 403B. So what I'm looking at now, I mean, I want to hold off on my Social Security until I'm 66 and, what is it, 1/4 or 1/3 now? For my age group, my birthday is in November of 56. So yeah, it'll be 66.
66 in 2 months. Or yeah. No, 4 months.
Four months. So I want to try to hold on to that amount, but I'm trying to figure out a way how to make up for that money that I'm losing, being that we're restructuring our situation.
You're not retiring. You don't want to turn on Social Security, but your income's probably more than $17,640 a year. So you would So if you turn that on, you're going to be kicking back a dollar for every two you make over that amount. Plus, your Social Security is going to be taxable.
Right. So I don't want to turn on my Social Security, but what I was wondering, is there a way that I could draw from my 403B and to make up the difference in the amount that I'm losing, or would that be a bad move?
It is unlikely. You're probably going to have to separate from service to be able to move that money to access it. Can you quit for a few months and then go back to work there? That would be one of your options in doing so.
Yeah, that's what I was told, you know, that I could retire and come back to work. Now, the only thing is I'll probably lose some benefits for a while, you know.
Yeah,
because I'm in a supervisory capacity that gives me some benefits that I wouldn't get. I would actually start all over again, you know, and be a new employee and receive the as far as my PTO, I would gain, you know, PTO benefits of a new employee, and you know, such as that. So I'm kind of, man, I'm at a loss as to what would be the best.
How much longer do you plan to work?
You know, my plan is to go to 66 in 4 months.
So another 4 years. So it would. Yeah. The other look is: do you have assets that you can draw on that won't hurt you long term? So it's kind of more of a conversation than I can do here, depending on what you have saved outside of work. If you don't have much saved out of work, we've kind of narrowed down your options, whether you're going to separate and return or not, or reduce expenses.
I do, but you know, it's not a whole lot. I have a savings account of about $20,000 that I've always kept for in case, you know, for emergencies, you know, that.
Yep. Steve,
that ain't going to do anything.
No, I think we about nailed it. Thanks for the call, Steve. Appreciate
Thank you.
It. Good luck with all that, and good luck with retirement when it happens. Scott, New Orleans, you are on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Scott?
My wife got hurt at work a few months back. She's on workman's comp. She's about to lose her job because of the after the family leave. You can't stay employed. She does have long-term disability. Can she collect both long-term disability and workman's comp?
Is this Social Security disability?
No.
It's pursuant to a long-term disability policy? Or where's a long-term disability coming from?
It's a long-term disability policy, benefits from work.
I mean, I would imagine that was, you know, the purpose of the purchase. I couldn't imagine that they would deny your benefits because you had to now claim them. The workers' compensation is sort of its own animal. Typically, it's really just going to cover your medical bills. They don't pay for pain and suffering or anything like that. So,
right.
No, most of the time, your long-term disability is actually it's in part to cover loss of earnings and wages and things like that. So, I really don't see any overlap there. And in reality, I don't know that workers' compensation insurer is entitled to the benefit of your independently purchased insurance. I know for other personal injury cases and the like, if you're injured and your health insurer picks that up, the other, let's call it an auto insurer, is not entitled to offset your medical bills just because they've been paid by your own private health insurance. It seems like an analogous situation here. They're not going to be entitled to any sort of offset at that point.
Well, they both basically pay 60% of what you was making.
Correct. And that's what I'm getting at here is it would seem to me is, you know, it's really going to be dictated by the terms of your policy. But I don't think that the workers' compensation insurer is going to be entitled to a reduction because you have your own independently purchased insurance. Your plan itself for long-term disability may cover that exact scenario. I can't be positive, but I think that's, again, going to be something that is explored through the side of your policy provider rather than the workers' compensation side. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. I was listening to the show as I was driving to go get her birthday cake, and I was realizing what, you know, it may be something I should look into where she could be in even much better shape now physically, financially, with her immediate income with that than she would be. Maybe she can't work there, and if she we probably have to, once she does that, she loses her insurance, so we need to put the claim in on that before she's terminated.
Yeah, that makes sense.
What about if she happens to be totally disabled as far as SSI?
I do know that if you're receiving SSI and workers' comp, there is an offset that occurs. And there's sort of a formula that gets you down to, I believe it's 80% of what your normal wage was. And so there is some offsetting between those two. I believe it would be the Social Security that is reduced, again, rather than the workers' comp. So that's really what you're looking for. And then ultimately, if your workers' comp settlement is structured properly, you can sort of not double dip, but make it structured at least to the point where you can receive your full benefit back from Social Security sooner than later. It's not going to be discounted for the remainder of your life.
And long-term disability could have some language in there that's affected by other things paying you as well.
Exactly.
So you need to look at that. And just because you're drawing a disability does not necessarily mean you're going to qualify for Social Security disability. You have to qualify for it as well.
Right.
What kind of birthday cake did you get her?
Swiss.
Swiss is a birthday cake?
Swiss confectionery. It's almond white with the poured icing and Swiss dots. It's her favorite cake.
Sounds good. Nice.
Sounds awesome. Good to me, yeah.
Happy birthday to Scott's wife. Hey,
yeah,
Scott.
Happy birthday.
Thanks for calling in, bud. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
If you want to be next, 504-260-0995. You can give us a call or text from the front screen of the Winning at Life app. And we're going to talk about a couple events coming up with Wes where you can meet him and Gregory and maybe get some help in person. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
I got your fix. Winning at Life. Live Financial Talk Radio. We're on weeknights with the Daily Wrap, Saturdays from 10 to 1. So here's your fix. You've got a question, a situation, give us a call. Get the phone, make the call. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. We've got James Parker here, as always, and Wes Blanchard, estate planning attorney. So we're going to talk with him some more. The phone number to join the conversations, 504-260-0995.
This perfect Saturday to have Wes on because his event is on Monday, the estate planning luncheon, the Lunch and Learn event. You have an event coming up on Tuesday, Gregory. So
we have a busy week. Wes has an awesome event Monday at noon. If you'd like to get on the list, you need to info@gregoryricks.com. Easy way to do that. Call the office, 504-832-9200. And Tuesday, we have the Wine, Wisdom, and Food event. That's Tuesday evening. And I believe that's at about 6:15, something like that. If you'd like to see about attending that event, we're going to talk about money. We're going to talk about the guided planning system process. We're going to talk about multiple streams of income. We're going to talk about creating tax efficiency. We'll give you a little bit of estate planning help there that evening. We're going to talk about levelizing volatility. And we're going to talk about wine and food and have a good time. Call the office to get in on that event. It's 504-832-9200. Email info@gregoryricks.com. And hey, you can sign up for these events through the Winning It Life app also.
George Biloxi, you're next up on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, George?
I'll be retiring here in August. I'll be 65 years old. I was born in 1954. And I plan on drawing my Social Security, which I will be getting a pension from the job that I'm at right now. Been there for 40 years. And they telling me that if I draw my Social Security and if I decide to go back to work, they're going to start taking some of it away from me. Is that true or false?
Well, he's 1 year away from full retirement age.
Yes. So that is the case because once you reach full retirement age, there is no earnings test at that point. So
what is
prior to that, if you're making more in 2019, if you make more than $17,640, they're going to take back a dollar for every $2 you earn over that amount until you make it to full retirement age.
And what is my full retirement age?
What is 66. Your birth year?
He said 54.
1954.
It's age 66 on your birthday is full retirement 66. Age.
So I got another year to go then, huh?
You've got a year to go.
Sorry about that. You do need to go ahead and get that Medicaid underway, though.
I do plan on doing that. But let's say I start drawing my Social Security and I go past the $17,000. When I turn full retirement at 66, I can make as much as I want to.
Exactly.
And I get my full Social Security, too, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I can handle that much, and okay. I sure do appreciate that.
Hey, let me ask you another question before you run away real quick. How much do you think you're going to make this year from your work?
I've already it's over $100,000.
Why are we turning on Social Security when you're making that kind of money? Why can't you wait 1 year? Because you're really hitting that. You're hitting that hard. But when they go the take back, and then when you get over, and I don't know the cap number, but let's say you get over $45,000 in income, they're taking back for every three you earn, they take a dollar because there's a high side test as well that alters that. But when you're looking at your multiple of income, you're basically whatever you're taking from Social Security, you're giving it back with that type of income. If you look at the math, I don't know that you should turn that on FRA.
I'm still crunching numbers and everything. I'm just want to get some of that stuff I put in there back before something happens to me.
Well, that's I think you're going to be fine on that. Are you married?
I am right now. Yes.
Okay. We won't ask any more questions there. Crunch some numbers. And thank you for listening to Winning at Life. If you need some help during the day on some other calculations, call my office.
Roger that. I listen to y'all every Saturday.
Awesome.
That's great.
Thanks, George.
Thank you. All right, if you want to be after George, 504-260-0995. Yeah, married. That's the best answer we've had in a long time. Hey, so Wes, your live event is coming up on Monday, and it's focused on estate planning. You already had one of these events last month, and it was totally packed to the gills. In fact, we had to scoot a couple extra chairs in there. What were they coming in for? Who's coming to this event?
So it really was sort of a wide range of demographics that came in as far as age goes. We had folks that were ready to get going and get going really quickly, and folks that were coming in and sort of exploring why this is important to them. And so what we did was make sure that we're kind of giving you a broad stroke about what your options are, why they're important, and why it's not something that should sort of fall by the wayside at all. And so, Louisiana law obviously is very peculiar. And so we kind of run through some of those topics and why it sort of has that reputation, and everyone sort of knows it as a Napoleonic code. And that's sort of the go-to terminology. But we want to dive a little bit deeper and discuss a bit about what that means and why it's notable as far as the difference between Louisiana and all the other states here. And then, we also just want to let you guys sort of see for yourself, look, here are some of the problems that can crop up if you don't have a plan in place. And we want to show you how easy it is to get it fixed, what we can do to help you sort of solve that problem and get to a resolution before the problem becomes exacerbated by some sort of life-changing event.
I was, I'm, sure.
Just throw in here, I'm looking at some numbers. Fatal crashes in Lee County leave 28 dead in 2019. Bicycle deaths match 28 total. Car accidents happen. Motorcycle. Oh, dementia. Dementia mortality rates I'm looking at here. Things happen. And unless, what I'm getting at is, don't act like James Parker that it happens to us, everybody else. Or you have to have surgery, and surgery doesn't go well. That's not any doctor. I just had a surgery, and it went really awesome, but there is, you sign off on a side effect, and I've had procedures over the years, and there's always this side effect called, you could die during surgery. You signing off on that, and you don't have a will. You don't have a power of attorney. You need to go to this event, and if you can't get into it, then you need to come to the next one. And heck, I wouldn't wait for the next one. I'd be calling up, said, look, can we have a conversation to kind of square some things away?
That's it. And I think that's a good point, Greg, because what we do at the event, again, is sort of just get into a little more detailed discussions. And we do have a short Q&A, but in reality, nobody's going to put their personal issues and problems out there for the rest of the room to hear. And so if you really want to have that tailored conversation that addresses your specific problems, the best thing to do is to set the meeting. And look, it's no pressure. We're going to come in. I don't have any qualms about telling you that we can do work with you. We know we can help you solve problems that you have. Maybe they're problems that you don't know you have now. But once we start that exploratory conversation, you'll sort of discover some of the pitfalls. And a lot of it, guys, has to do with thinking beyond that first initial scenario. Have an idea and take two more steps after what you think might happen. Well, what if X, Y, and Z would happen? Do I have something in place? Because oftentimes you feel as if you're prepared for the most likely scenario, but what happens when the unexpected occurs? And that's sort of, I guess, one general concept to keep in mind for estate planning.
All right, so this is all happening on Monday. So sign up. If we can get you in on Monday, maybe there's a cancellation or something, that'll be just spectacular. Worst case scenario is we'll talk to you next month at the next event if you really got to go and we can't get you in on Monday. So Wes Blanchard, thank you very much for your time. As far as your estate planning expertise, always appreciate it. I'm kind of upset we didn't get to our forced airship story that we had talked about getting ready for the show. Can we just keep that on the back burner and maybe do it next month?
Absolutely.
Because some of these get brutal, Gregory. These forced, you have forced airship stories that you've seen as well. I see you grinning already.
Yeah, actually, I'd like to talk about it now, except Wes is running out of time. But it's, and him and I had an extensive discussion, and it's kind of, you go about the wording of it. is a little bit confusing, but that's why people should attend that event he's holding on Monday.
All right. Book.
Oh, the book. Tax-free book. You want to create some tax-free income. One of your two or three of your streams of income for retirement should be tax-free. Got a book to mail to you. Call the office, 504-832-9200, info@gregoryricks.com, and ask for the book.
How much does the book cost, Gregory?
Free.
There you go.
Did I get that? It's free.
Wes, how much was the book? I don't think I heard him.
I think it was free $3.99, he said.
Okay. All right. We got another hour to go. If you want to continue listening, stick right here on your station, or you can continue listening on the Winning at Life app. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
This is Winning at Life. Welcome to the show. And those that were expecting it, thanks for joining in again. This is live financial talk radio. We've covered a lot of topics this morning. Yeah, we've already been on the air for a while. The Winning at Life app, if you'd like to learn more about this show, when else we're on. And we're going to be with you for the rest of this hour up until 1 o'clock, those that are listening to us Central Time. We're also streaming. We're on Periscope, which is another streaming app. We're on Facebook Live. And we are on various streams out there where people are listening to us across the country. But it's live financial talk radio. You can create the conversation. We just like it to be about money, but we kind of insist. And the show is Winning at Life. And, you know, I think we keep score. How big's your pile? This is how big my pile. Money, that is. How big is your money? The more you have, the more you can take in income. Think about it that way. And if you do it tax efficiently, you can keep more of it. That's part of the conversation as well. We look to create a lot of efficiencies. Less you pay on Medicare supplements, yeah, that's more you keep. The way you handle your Medicare coverage is more efficient. What about, okay, you're not retired, your health coverage? You know, do you have a high deductible plan? Then maybe you might be setting some of that away in a health savings account, which will create efficiencies later on. So we can talk about this so many ways. We talked about estate planning today as well. We've had a bunch of calls on Social Security as well. One of my favorite topics, if I didn't mention, I am Gregory Ricks. If you want to know more about me, it's gregoryricks.com or the show winningatlife.com. I just lost my place. This is what live radio does. Where was I headed with a topic?
Jump into the phones, maybe?
Well, I tell you what, we'll jump into the phones.
All right. John in Biloxi, you're on Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, sir?
Hey, guys. It looks like it's going to be a Social Security day. I've got another question for you on that.
Awesome.
Sure.
Okay. All right. I'm working with the state. I've been with them a couple of years now. I'm one of those people that had a lot of issues to the point where I was not able to or did not put money away for retirement, but I'm 65, will be 66 next October. I plan to work with the state to get at least a 10-year retirement, so I'll be about, I don't know what, 75 when I quit. No, actually about 73. Okay, next year I can draw 100% of my Social Security. I'm not going to need that money. Question is, do I leave it where it is? Should I take that money, sock it away somewhere in some, either a Roth or some other instrument like that? Or should I live on the Social Security and take a good portion of my salary with the state and put it into, I have a 7% required participation in laser here in Louisiana. So, and then I put another little bit of money aside for in a Roth on top of that. So question is, what do I do with it?
Are you, and through your work, are you participating in Social Security?
I am not. No, I'm with the state, so they take no Social Security out. But I've only been with the state for a couple of years, so I'm fully vested in Social Security.
Okay, so how many years have you worked outside of the state?
Oh, okay. Starting from a time I was, 16 years old till 2 years ago. So
till 63?
Yeah.
So about 40 or so years stuffed in there. So if you have significant or substantial earnings above a certain number for 30 years.
Because it's a couple part, and what James is getting at is one of the exceptions to that is 30 or more years of substantial earnings. And there's this document called the Windfall Elimination Provision that it's at ssa.gov. And it just, not promoting Google, but just Google it. And it's going to show you a link to a PDF, and it gives on the back page substantial earnings that year, which counts to your Social Security. So you need 30 of those to where your pension type job that's not participating in security is not going to affect you if you have substantial earnings of 30 years or more. Odds are you're one of those candidates that are going to opt out. Now, what I was going to advise before we drill down in this, that if you don't have the substantial earnings, then yeah, you probably should turn on Social Security, draw those benefits before they take a hit when you turn on your state pension. But now I don't know that you should do that because you might likely have 30 plus years of substantial earnings. The reason why, if you're not going to have the windfall elimination provision affect you, is deferring your Social Security, that benefit continues to grow. Even though you're not adding dollars to it, it's still growing by 8% a year on deferral. Where else are you going to get a return like that, John? And if you turn it on, it's going to be taxed as well. So what in this case, we kind of would run a couple calculation scenarios and see what's best. You could turn on the income, live off more off it, and defer income. But are you deferring enough to offset that and justify the taxes? And will that beat that 8% increase? So this isn't just a straight up answer. I'd have to run some scenarios and drill down on the math.
What do you think, John?
Well, yeah, I wasn't sure what the percentage of, return would be on my Social Security money if I just left it alone. 8% sounds pretty good.
Yeah, 8% guaranteed. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where I could do any better than that legally.
Yeah, because if you're going to take it and save it, that's going to be after tax, and you're going to be taxed on 85%. And you're not going to go get 8% guaranteed growth on that net.
Right,
either.
Right. Well, I guess the only other thing is I've sold a house, so I don't have a house anymore. Would it pay to take that money and sock it into a house and at least have some real estate?
All right, we got to run here, John. We're 10 seconds left. Thank you very much for your call.
Thank you, guys.
Right, have a good one. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks. Come on over. I just want to hear
that ringtone. I like it turned up. Welcome back. It's Winning at Life. Live Financial Talk Radio. Get the phone. Make the call. 504-260-0995. Join the conversation. I'm going to let you pick the topic so long as it's about money. Yeah, I like some money. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. If you want to know more about me, it's gregoryricks.com. If you'd like to have a daytime conversation with me about your money, your situation, see where you are on the path, we'll plug you into our guided planning system. That's our process. Some of the areas that we like to work with you on, and we're not just going to sit down and talk about investment planning. Yeah, that's part of the conversation, but what about income planning? You know, that was a conversation we had with the caller. He was talking about income. When should something be turned on? And then what if I turn it on and do this? And well, what if I turn it on, live on it, and save more of the income into the company plan? You know, that's what we're talking about, is these scenarios, and where somebody's looking at retiring, that scenario. So also tax planning, about creating tax efficiency. Are you managing your tax brackets properly? Are you turning on income properly and creating tax efficiency? Do you have tax-free income into the mix? Another twist on tax-free income is Roth. Should you Roth or should you not? You know, what are the reasons not to? And there's a bunch of them. Healthcare planning. Do you have 5 minutes to save 20% or more on your Medicare insurance?
Sounds kind of familiar.
Sounds a little familiar.
You just made that up, didn't you?
It came off the top of my head right there.
Brilliant.
You know, do you know that you kind of need to deal with Medicare? Here's what I was going earlier, is we have two decisions to make in life. We have to make a decision, and that's when to turn on Social Security, and you have to act on it. It's a decision you have to make and act on, because it doesn't turn itself on by itself, and your Medicare coverage, and how are you covering the gaps in that? And Medicare does not turn itself on either, so it's decisions you have to make. So we help on those things. Also, estate planning. We refer to it as legacy planning, because I'm not an attorney. I'm not a CPA, but yeah, I'm a fiduciary, a financial advisor in my day job. So if you'd like some help there, 504-832-9200 is the office number, gregoryricks.com.
Rick in Gulfport, you're on Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. How can we help you, Rick?
Yes, sir. I had an old IRA from a previous employer, and back in 2015, I met this guy. I think his forte was Medicare, like Medicare supplements and that kind of thing.
Yep. But
we were talking about my old IRA that I had as a 401k through my employer, and he convinced me that the market was about to crash. It was back, I think it's 17,000. He said it's as high as it's ever been. Can't go nowhere but down. So he sold me an annuity. And right after that, I was listening to someone who shall remain nameless. And the first thing I heard was, don't never buy an annuity. And I went, oh my God, I just did it. And I don't know whether I should cash it in and put it in something more aggressive or just leave it alone. I mean, because it's going to be a 10% penalty to withdraw it at this point, because it was for 15 years and it's only been 3, I think.
You mean the surrender period was 15 years?
Surrender period
was 15 years. It was a 15-year contract. It doesn't mature until 15. And, the penalty slowly decreases over the years for your withdrawal, for you to liquidate it.
Yes.
Over the years, it goes lower and lower. And for it to be zero, it takes 15 years for the penalty to be nothing.
I'll kind of point that out in one way, that 15 years is a bit long. James, what are you going to be doing in 15 years?
Not a clue. I mean, hopefully this show, but
I think humans as a vision, we can talk about the next 10 years, 15 years, a little bit more of a leap. First off, all money shouldn't have went into an annuity, and I would be hard pressed to put money in an annuity that goes beyond 10 years. And the other thing is, I don't believe all money should be in equities either. So, yeah, and doing something out of fear, once again, is an emotional decision. And some people say, oh, don't do an annuity, they're bad. That's like saying, don't do a reverse mortgage, they're bad. Well, that's an emotional statement. And what you have to look at, what does this do for you? Annuities aren't for everyone. Well, equities aren't for everyone either. You can say, well, equities are bad. Well, why are they bad? Well, they can go down. They can go down too much. So you have to find that balance and find some, and that's one reason always to get a good second opinion from a fiduciary, is how I would put it there. Now, and to say get out of it, I don't know your overall situation. We don't like to pay get out penalties. And it has to be a plan made up for it, because from a fiduciary or advisor standpoint, if we're opting out of that or having that discussion at my daytime job, it's advice. Here on the show, it's guidance. So if I'm at the office giving you advice, I have to justify that advice. So we have to take in consideration of what that fee is to get out and what's the alternatives to do that. If I'm involved in the transaction, we can have a conversation and you can go off and do something else you choose with it. But if I'm, we're having a discussion about it, you know, we're taking all the material facts, crunching numbers and seeing what's best for you. And hopefully that's going to perform and do what you expect it to do. But, you know, you've seen this market, it goes up and it goes down. Historically, long-term, it keeps going up, but that doesn't mean going up is going to work in your favor because of the ups and downs on the way, because you have to consider sequence of return. You have to consider reverse dollar cost averaging if you're taking income. So this annuity, would this be a fixed indexed annuity or would it be a variable annuity or is it an interest rate annuity?
I think it's a variable. I think it is. I'm not sure.
Well, a variable annuity is kind of interesting because that still would expose you to market movement, because typically a variable annuity is a wrapper around mutual funds that are inside of it. A fixed indexed annuity gives you upside of the indexes that it's linked to, but does not expose you to downside market
risk. Yeah, I won't lose any money. He told me that the worst I could do was zero.
So it's a fixed product of some
sort. It sounds like it might be a fixed indexed annuity if it gives you upside.
At first, we didn't index any of it because he thought it was fixing to drop out. But when in the next year when it didn't drop out, he said, well, let's move part of it over to the index. And he moved it around to several funds the next year. And okay, that's where it's staying.
Yeah, I'm still not sure. Typically on that front page, the bottom half, there's a paragraph there that basically states what that contract is. Sounds like you at least might need probably a phone conversation or do one of our digital presentations online.
Well, I'll either give you a call next week or at your office or.
Yeah, absolutely. You can call my office. I'm going to give you that number 504 because others are probably needing it as well listening.
Okay.
So, oh Lord, I need to talk to them about this too. 504-832-9200 and my team will take care of you on that and we'll get connected and have a conversation and
help you
with this. Awesome.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Thank you for the call, Rick.
Y'all have a good day.
Thanks, Rick.
Awesome.
All right, if you want to be next, 504-260-0995. But you and I know exactly where Rick's calls come from. He heard a commercial that says, I would die and go to hell before I ever bought an annuity. And then he has this other guy saying annuities are the only way to go.
Yeah, that's old Kenny saying that. Look, here's one thing, and I can tell you from Kenny's standpoint. His firm manages billions and billions of dollars, and it's all managed money. And that he does not want any of his assets under management going elsewhere to an annuity. And there are time and places annuities are appropriate. And of course, there's times when they aren't. But you can't go out and make a blanket statement kind of saying, no, this is not appropriate. Well, you know, his business makes a revenue stream off of managed money. And as that managed money grows, so does his revenue stream. And it happens, it keeps reoccurring every year. And in comparison to, say, using a 10-year life of a client, I'm dual licensed. So we are in the managed money world. You know, we do manage money. We have equities under management. We also have fixed indexed annuities, fixed interest annuities that we can handle because we're licensed for those as well. And it doesn't matter what we're discussing. We're a fiduciary, so have to put your interest forward. But if I look at a client comparison and revenue streams for the business, which makes us more money over 10 years? Equities does. The Wall Street money does. So it might be something behind those commercials, just saying.
All right, if you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, you better call Gregory, 504-260-0995.
I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
I'm going to be off the air in about 25 minutes.
And it's a Saturday, so
it's a Saturday, so
I might have half a beer.
My work week ends in a little while. Does my reading and research. I've got so much to do, but I am going to take a long lunch, enjoy this awesome Saturday afternoon. How about you, James?
That's what I'm saying. I may go nuts. I may have half a beer. If things go really crazy, I'll finish it. I'll have a whole thing. Over the course of one weekend, woo, I go crazy sometimes.
I'm not sure, but you know, it's kind of I always enjoy the lunch Saturday after the show. And yeah, we've been on the air since 10 o'clock this morning. Thanks for all of you that have stuck with us, and those that have pop in and out, you're awesome too. And those that just stick with us and always listen, we have a weeknight show as well. And if you want more info about our show, You could go to winningatlife.com, gregoryricks.com, or better yet, become a part of the Winning at Life Nation and download the app. You could text, email, call the show from it, find out more information, find out about reaching me at my day job. I work as a fiduciary, a licensed financial advisor, and we have a great, great team and a registered, trademarked, however you might say it, process. We call it the guided planning system to cover income planning, investment planning, tax planning, healthcare planning, and legacy planning.
It kind of sounds like what we do on the show.
And to help with that, we have the Total Wealth Authority. Jude Heath, CPA, him and I, well, he's doing a tax luncheon week from Monday, and I'm helping out a little bit with him on that, on creating tax-free income. You can find out more about that. Wes Blanchard, estate planning attorney, he's got another filled up lunch and learn on Monday. Isn't that awesome response? And he puts out some great information on creating wills and just handling all of that stuff, why you should, and tying into his process. We have Dwayne Stein of Mortgage Gumbo. You know, everybody's got to have some type of leverage, it seems, most of the time in buying a house. You might need some leverage in retirement regarding reverse mortgages. If the benefit, if what those do can help you, he's somebody to have a conversation with as well. And of course, myself, Gregory Ricks, I am your host along with James Parker, and we're going to be here with you till 1 o'clock. We've had, gosh, this has been a Social Security day in conversation. And then, you know, it's been big on annuity calls, just like our friend that Rick that just had a conversation about his. And not surprising there is he doesn't quite understand what he has. And then it was kind of almost like a fear thing. So and let's assume it's a fixed index. Now, the surrender period is too long, and that's a caution out there, is I don't like more than 10 years. Because one of the questions I like to address with clients when we're using that to balance volatility in the mix is, you know, and it doesn't matter whether it's a annuity product, that gold coin, gold bar that you're buying from the commercial salesman on TV, whether it's a mutual fund, a stock, a real estate property for residential or for rental, or that car purchase. What I always kind of think about, what is my exit? Can I unwind that? At what point can I get out that deal and get clean, should things change? And likely you're not going to, if you create balance, liquidity is in your world, you know. And I'll give you an example from real estate. A few years back, I was buying some land to build a house on, and I had been on a search for, I know, at least 2 years. And I'd spotted that piece of land during that search, and the seller was wanting too much for it, in my opinion, at that time, because I wasn't willing to pay that. then we were driving around again and saw a reduction. And I said, I did a big sniff and looked at my wife, Stacy, and said, I smell the need to sell.
Oh, that desperation stink. That yeah,
desperation was kind of felt that when since that when I went by there. And we ended up buying that property. But during that process, the realtor that I was working with, we had a conversation, and she said, you know, because I was looking at another land deal down that road. And she said, you can still get out of this deal. I said, I appreciate that, but I'm priced really good here that I want to lock this down and continue to pursue that one. I did get that other land deal, which was like a dream deal for size and everything where I built my home. And I sold that property 6 months later and made a few grand. Because what did I think? I thought about what my exit was on that. Now, the other deal, I did pay a premium, but I looked at the exit long term. So I viewed it differently. Here's another way of viewing a car. Years back, I bought this car, and it was probably like, gosh, it's more than, you know, I've never paid for this. There, so I looked at, well, I want it. It'll be fun. How about maybe I should lease it. And let's do the math this way. The car is going to cost $60K and the lease obligation was $30K. So what's my exposure on that worst case?
$30K. Okay.
So, and I ended up turning it in back at the lease. I didn't want the car. I didn't have to worry about the other exposure because I was out of the contract, out of the obligation versus if I was buying it. Oh my gosh, I'm on the hook for the whole $60,000. I just didn't want to be there. And it's the same way with an annuity. What is your exit? Does it have some annuities allow you to opt out without a surrender period?
But Rick,
and there's others that have surrender periods and some have them, I think, too long.
Rick said he had a 15-year surrender period.
Yeah, but not uncommon.
If we had more time with him, I would have asked him about the term he used was it matures in 15 years.
Yeah, he might. People do define it that way. It matures. They talk about it like it's a bond or a CD. Typically, if you're using a annuity as an investment or savings vehicle, typically what in the annuity world, a maturity date is like when you make age 95 or age 100 or age 105. What that means from an annuity standpoint is if you have not started taking money out, they're going to start sending you checks. So it could be called maturity date. There's a few other terms for it, but that's typically what they're talking about. But you have a surrender period. Some people think, oh, the surrender's over. I've got to get out. Sometimes that's a little bit misleading by agents that have put them, you know, the annuity salesman put them into that. Oh, the surrender, it's matured. The surrender's up. We've got to put you in another one. No, you don't. The annuity, how I look at it, if it's appropriately done, it should continue to do its job going forward. Now, what might change that? A death, something materially has changed in life that do I need this money shifted or go into a different direction might be that. The other reason you would change from that is it doing what I expected to do or is it underperforming? Underperformance would be a reason for a change, but it needs to be justifiable, especially from a fiduciary standpoint in giving guidance and or advice. Is this a situation? We're not changing it for the sake of changing it. I've got a client that has worked with us a number of years, and she bought a number of annuities and other investments, and we've done some things with her, but most of her assets were kind of pre-invested. But what she liked is our guided planning system and how we can sort out where the income should be turned on from and where it continue. Her old guy that put her into an annuity was back after the surrender and said, oh, it's up. We've got to put you in somewhere else. I said, why would you want to put that money back under a surrender period? And heck, it's averaged 7% return the past decade. Why would you stop that machine? She said, well, I don't do anything without talking to you. I said, well, that's good, because we want this to stay in place and continue.
504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We're Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. And after the party, the after party. Hey, welcome. Happy Saturday. It's Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. This is your wallet's favorite show. It's the Money Show. Yeah, we do this 6 days a week. We're on Monday through Friday at 7 o'clock. We just do a quick little one-hour daily wrap-up show. What you stumbled onto here Saturdays, we're on from 10 to 1 live, and this is our weekly wrap where we get to wax a little more eloquently, take a few more calls because we have some more time, and none of our stations carry all of our shows all the time, so if you want to hear everything we do, you can download the Winning It Life app, and you can either listen live or on demand to the podcast. We've made it available for you there.
Yeah, if you want to call the show, we have a few minutes left. Get your question in. Get the phone. Make the call. You can choose the subject. As long as it's money, 504-260-0995. Americans are pretty honest. Would you think that, James?
Oh, yeah. I'm okay with that.
Maybe who's not honest? Could it be Italians?
You have a statistic on honesty?
Yeah, I do. American taxpayers pay an estimated 84% of the federal income taxes that would be collected if all taxpayers were 100% honest. So you might think, well, that's not very good. Well, Germany's VCR rate is 68%.
Yikes. Okay.
Italy's is 62%. So compared to them, Americans are pretty honest.
That's the old Axis powers, though. I've kept my eye on them since World War II. What's Japan's rate? Japan, actually, they're full of honor. They're probably at like 98%, those guys.
Yeah, the source of that, if you want to look more into other countries' VCR rate, it's the Internal Revenue Service. They're on top of honesty.
Oh, they're
that's
on top
why
of honesty?
So occasionally they randomly check returns as well for honesty.
You know, I saw a rundown on, it was an editorial on people trying to figure out why Americans are so honest when it comes to filing their taxes, because the audit rate has just plummeted so much in the last 20 years.
Because of honesty.
Because of honesty, because of budget cuts, and it's inconvenient. And for many of these audits, it costs more money to do the audit than they retrieve from the taxpayer. So they've just focused on the high income earners. But the audit rate's fallen from like 3% of tax returns were audited in the 90s to somewhere around 1% these days. But you don't need it if we're going to be upstanding, honest citizens, Gregory.
Yeah. Hey, how about these numbers? 10-year budget proposal for fiscal years 2020 through 2029.
Oh, this is going to gross me out.
That was released on March 11th. Forecast $49 trillion of tax receipts and $56.3 trillion in outlays. This results in a $7.3 trillion deficit over the decade. The baseline numbers against which the White House compares its most recent forecast included $48.9 trillion of tax receipts and $59 trillion of outlays. Didn't they also say that somewhere around 15 years the budget would be balanced?
Yeah, which is bogus number.
I was thinking, you know, if you had a game plan, and I've just kind of long term, say a president gets in and majority of the people like him, more than just say 51 or 50, maybe 62% of everybody just likes him consistent. And he puts together a plan and look, this all isn't going to get finished in my first 4 years, so I'm probably going to need to do 8. But this is a longer term plan, but we need somebody to fulfill and complete that. So my VP here is, you're going to need to support him for 8 years too, so we can get all this budget stuff in line and fixed before somebody else comes in and messes it up. But no, nobody presents it like that. I've never heard that, but that does make sense if you're trying to get something accomplished that's going to take more than 4 years, because that's all they're guaranteed in is 4 years, right? They got to run again.
And then
you're done after 8, then maybe the VP might run, might not. There's inconsistency there. I'd kind of like Me? I'd have James Parker as my vice president because I know he's going to want to run and be president.
And rule everybody? 16
years there of consistency, and we'll get this budget handled.
Look,
without causing a Great Depression.
What I see when someone says they're going to balance the budget 15 years down the road means they have no intention of balancing the budget. They have no serious proposal on the table. Balancing the budget's not a priority, is what you're telling me, if it's 15 years away.
Well, how do you shave $1 trillion in overspending? Because that's where we're at right now. I think, what was that proposal?
The deficit
was around $4.5 trillion budget proposal for next fiscal year, and we've got revenues of about $3.5 trillion. It's kind of ugly.
We're looking at about a $900 billion deficit next year, and unless we have just amazing GDP growth and our tax revenues go through the roof. But as it stands right now, $900 billion. This is not, we're not in a recession or a depression, so there's no excuse for government intervention or stimulus spending. We're not in a war, you know, Afghanistan and Iraq aside. We're not in a major land war where we have hundreds of thousands of troops deployed anywhere and we have to make all these tanks and bombs or we're going to die. If you're running a $900 billion deficit when there's 3.8% unemployment, 3% GDP growth, and no wars, you're not trying. No one's trying. Neither party's trying. Both of them deserve all the criticism in the world because this is really the only thing that matters is what happens with how this money is spent in the House of Representatives, basically. This is how countries fail. This is what happened to Venezuela. This is what happened to the Weimar Republic. This is what happened to the Soviet Union. They spent far more than they took in. They had to hyperinflate their currency, and then it all collapsed.
This is interesting as well, because I really didn't know this, but I guess I'm going to know this now. The U.S. debt ceiling was reinstated at $21.988 trillion as of March 2nd. The Treasury Department is projecting they will avoid a default on any government-issued debt instruments until September of 2019 by delaying some regular outlays, pension payments made the U.S. Postal Service and
Yikes.
Such from Treasury Department. I didn't know we're going to have to deal with that again this year. Okay. Obviously, it was reinstated, but it's not solved. Great.
It hasn't been a problem before.
You must
though.
Be excited.
I'm disgusted. This is the most disgusting part about politics we could possibly talk about. Because their job is to balance the budget, and they just don't do it. And the last time they did do it for that couple of years at the end of Clinton and Bush's first year, actually ran a surplus, Newt Gingrich and company just made those budgets to cut off Bill Clinton at the knees. Because they all turned around. Same people were in power when George Bush got in power, and they jacked up spending. Both parties just sicken me when it comes to the spending stuff.
Well, here's something concerning. 23% of 3,462 American workers surveyed admit they live paycheck to paycheck all the time. They don't have margin.
Talk about margin a little bit. That might be something we have to start stressing on the show a little bit more.
Well, we like margin if we're going to figure what is our inflow versus our outflow. We won't. If you're going to save money, you have to have margin. What does that mean? You make more than what you spend. If you're in retirement, you need margin. You don't need to be taking all the capability or more than what your assets can do. That could be a spend out, but that also means margin. So you want to create extra room, you know, in your emergency money. How do you get that? Well, you create margin. You don't want to totally live paycheck to paycheck. And what that says, that on the other hand, that's not such a bad number, because now we have 77% of Americans that have some margin.
That sounds a lot better.
Well, that's of workers, though, you know, talking about living paycheck to paycheck. See if we can help you on that. Hey, if you've enjoyed the show, download the app, Winning at Life app. Find out when we're on weeknights. We're also, yeah, we have a weeknight show at 7 for an hour talking about money, and we're back on next Saturday, so we want you to join us again. So download the Winning at Life app. If you'd like more information about me, as you know, I'm a fiduciary. I am a financial advisor in my day job. I have a firm. And you can go to gregoryricks.com and learn more. We've got a new website going live this weekend. Sometime I don't know when it's going up, but I was told It is going live this weekend, but either way, we've got a website. And if you want to talk about the guided planning system, those areas we can help you with on your money, give the office a call, 504-832-9200. The website's gregoryricks.com. Look forward to hearing from you.
All right, your home away from the show is winningatlife.com and the Winning at Life app. Winning at Life app, super important. You can